Another thing that's just referenced in the paper that is important, you all are here, so you know this, but the estates code and was changed a few years ago to require not only attorneys ad litem, but every person who's going to participate in a, every attorney who's going to participate in a guardianship proceeding must have taken the 4 hours of training. I confess that I was involved in trying to get that done because in San Antonio we had a lot of PI lawyers who would file guardianships and then leave people to their own devices. And as you all are aware, a guardianship is loaded with landmines and people can get in a lot of trouble. It's a big fiduciary responsibility. And if they don't do everything correctly, they can wind up in trouble. Now, 4 hours is not enough to teach a PI attorney much about guardianships, but it helps. And at least maybe it gives them an opportunity to get someone else involved in that. And then the final thing I wanted to mention, I guess in part because I've been doing quite a bit of this, is that the sections that deal with mediation in the estates code, which are sections 1055.151 and 152, have some specific requirements about what must be in a mediated settlement agreement that involves a guardianship, including boldface types and the fact that the attorneys must sign off on this. I also have been involved in a matter rather recently where a mediated settlement agreement was reached as to a guardianship. But also, and as we're all aware, many fought over guardianships are in fact pre-death will contests. It's just the kids want to be sure to stake out their positions after mom dies. So this particular matter had a settlement agreement not only as to the guardianship, but also as to the will. And but the guardianship sections provide that the court still has to approve that settlement agreement, and even though the parties may have agreed, the court doesn't have to approve that. And in this particular case, the court did not approve it, but then mom actually died, and so one of the parties was also unhappy with the will contest settlement agreement that was in there. The settlement agreement contained a severability clause saying that, you know, if one part's not valid, then the other parts still are. And the whole thing actually wound up going back to arbitration with the mediator who had done that. But I took the position, as did the mediator in the arbitration, that the will contest agreement was a binding contract. And although the court didn't approve the guardianship portion of that, it was still binding on the parties as to the will contest part of that. But you may want to pay some attention to that, be aware of the fact that, and by my observation, there are more guardianships going to mediation. Maybe that's just because, I don't know, people think I know something about it, so they asked me to do that. But I've seen several of those. And so you may want to pay attention to that, not only the requirements for the agreement itself to be binding on the parties, but the fact that the court may or may not approve that, and be sure that people understand that when that's going on. So those were things that I thought were important that I don't think were mentioned in here. I also would mention that temporary guardianships, as you know, you file them, you got to have a hearing within 10 days. Basically, a fundamental temporary can only last for 60 days, but there are provisions in there that you can extend a temporary while there's a contest going on. But because I happen to have had some involvement in it, there was a case that came out of Uvalde where they had done a temporary and it got extended because of a contest, and then sometime they would set a hearing for when they were going to do something about it, but the hearing wouldn't maybe happen, and then the judge would just sign an order extending the temporary, and then no motion would be filed on all of that, and fundamentally they didn't comply with the procedure which requires that you have a motion to extend and a hearing on that, and the thing got extended as a temporary several times without motions, without hearings, and it also meant that everything that happened in the context of that temporary got voided. So you may want to pay a little bit of attention to that in case you're involved in a temporary situation that gets extended. So then I want to just move into the paper itself, which does go in great detail, and just and if you haven't looked at it, it is loaded with all kinds of forms that are going to help you, if you don't have them yourself, help you get done a lot of different things. But fundamentally, we're going to run through the paper in here, which talks about the role of a guardian and the procedures that they're required to do. And I know when I was creating guardianships, I used to tell people this, that I would tell this to the guardian: you should assume that you can't do anything unless you have a court order that says it's okay. I would say that's not the truth. That's not absolutely true, but you're better off if you think it is. So you should always be in conversation with your attorney about whether or not you need a court order to do whatever it is you're doing. And as attorneys, you all need to impress on them the fact that they are fiduciaries and they need to separate the assets out. They don't get to use it as their own piggy bank. And you may have worked and run into those circumstances in a different context, and something I'm going to bring up at a different CLE event. You all are probably aware with the fact that family limited partnerships and those sorts of things are all created, and it's all just fine that mom and dad just kind of use that as their bank account and go in and out and all of that kind of stuff. But after...